Hello, and welcome to Choose Wisely. This is the podcast where we deconstruct food and sustainability topics with nuance and primary sources. Here we believe there are lots of right ways to eat well, and that we can't change a food system we don't truly understand. I'm Caroline Nelson, your host, and today I am bringing you kind of a current events episode, a summary of what we're seeing so far in the protests being held over in Europe by the farmers. This has not been really extensively covered in mainstream media, at least as far as I've seen. I first came across the news on TikTok, and it seems like things really got kicked off in January and that they have spread like wildfire across a whole bunch of different countries. And so today we're going to talk about it. We are going to dive into why they're protesting and why it matters for us. So, like I said, I first came across these protests on TikTok, and the videos are really quite remarkable. So picture, you know, endless rows and rows of tractors lining Parisian streets. Picture, you know, manure being spewed onto government buildings. Picture farmers throwing eggs, tipping over trucks filled with imported foreign produce. Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. The algorithm must have sensed I was engaged and interested. So I started getting a lot of similar content. And so I've been starting to dig in. So here's a summary of who, you know, which farmers are protesting, which countries. So it's very widespread. So far, I've seen news of protests in Spain, France, Belgium, Bulgaria, the Netherlands, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland, Germany, and Italy. And there's a very wide variety of reasons that farmers in all these different nations have felt like they've had enough. There's smaller kind of groups and coalitions of farmers, and they each have their own goals. So today I'm going to speak very in general. And if anybody knows any farmers that have been involved in the protests in any country that would like to come on the podcast and speak to me, I would be really, really interested to hear. But quick summary. So what they are saying for the most part is that they're struggling to survive. There's a lot of reasons for this. Some of the reasons they say are higher input costs, so fuel and equipment and supplies, unnecessary bureaucracy that is pulling them away from, you know, the work they need to be doing outside their offices. They're talking a lot about these kind of a lot of hoops they have to jump through, and then they get fines if they fill anything out incorrectly. They're talking a lot about unfair competition from non-European Union nations. So in short, that is, let's say, you know, in France, food that is also grown in France being imported from other countries that are not held to the same standards, environmental standards, as they're held to in France, imported and then sold more cheaply at the grocery stores, which undercuts French farmers. So that's a big issue among these farmer protests. And then there's different environmental mandates. So green initiatives in the goal of carbon neutrality by 2050. There's mandates to cut fertilizer use, pesticide use, mandates to leave a larger percentage of land fallow. And then they're also saying the grocery stores are being unfair to farmers and gouging consumers. So they're on the farmer end, they're not fulfilling contracts and buying the amount of produce that they say they're going to buy. And then on the consumer end, they're hiking prices way up while farmers are going under. There's also another piece of this, which I'm not going to get super into, but just to mention it, the war in Ukraine has exacerbated some of what's going on. Basically, in order to bolster Ukrainian grain production and Ukrainian farmers, a lot of, you know, tariffs and duties were waived on Ukrainian grain imports into other countries. And Ukraine is kind of the breadbasket of Europe. They grow a ton of grain. And so what's happening is farmers like in Poland are finding that, you know, all this grain's being brought over the border from Ukraine, and it's crashing Polish grain prices. And they're like, what the heck? You know, we're trying to help Ukraine and it's at our expense. So that's another really big piece that's going on. So I want to frame our discussion by sharing a few things that we all need to just know about farmers in general. I saw an article, I think it was in The Economist. It was shocking, like the tone deafness of it. It was like privileged farmers whining and complaining about protecting the environment or something. It was just so like mean-spirited and poorly done that it reminds me that there's a few things that we need to understand and get straight about farmers before we frame this discussion. Okay, so number one, farmers in general love farming, right? Like, it sounds obvious, but farmers are, for the most part, like they love their work to the point where they are fairly content to work insane hours under challenging conditions for little pay. This has been the state of farming forever. Farmers don't like to leave their farms. They are farmers for a reason, okay? Like, they don't live in the city for a reason. It, in general, takes a lot to rally farmers to, number one, work together, and number two, leave their farms where they have a ton of work to do to advocate for any type of cause. You don't see a lot of farmer protests in the world. Like, this is pretty remarkable, what we're seeing. So I guess that's the first thing I would say is, like, I think we need to believe farmers. I really think there's an anti-farmer bias where people think farmers are closed-minded, ignorant, maybe not educated, backwards, country people, and they sort of assume, oh, conservative, you know, they're conservative, so we can't listen to them. They can't have valid grievances, all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of anti-farmer bias, I think, here in the US, I think over in Europe as well. And so there's a tendency among folks who are maybe more intellectual or in government or, you know, more white collar jobs to kind of look down on them and not think their grievances are valid. So that's really the first thing I want to say is, like, farmers love farming. They're in general willing to put up with a lot that the general population is not willing to put up with. There's a reason that pretty much everybody left farming. You know, we used to have like a huge percentage of our population was farmers. Now it's 1 or 2% in the US and Europe. People don't tend to want to become farmers. There's a lot of reasons for that. So I think we need to believe them, believe farmers. Secondly, something else that's been riveting about these protests, it's, I have to be honest, it's been fun to watch. Like, there's been, you know, yes, there's been some disruptive things that I've seen on TikTok, you know, when they light like a bunch of straw on fire or tipping over some trucks. But in general, the protests have been really peaceful. I haven't seen anybody get hurt, but the farmers are also not messing around. Like, you realize how much power farmers actually have if they would choose to wield it, and they are choosing to wield it in Europe. Like, the police in some of these videos are just, they're just standing there kind of helpless as these gigantic tractors block roadways. Like, there's really nothing they can do. The farming equipment is so big. It's so specialized. Yeah, the farmers are the only ones who can drive it. You know, they're spewing manure. They're hauling in loads of straw and tires, and they're blocking roads. Like, they can do a lot pretty easily. They can create a lot of inconvenience for people. And the protests, they seem like they're serious, but they don't feel mean-spirited, dangerous. They feel like they're really there just to kind of flex their muscles a little bit and make people see them. The third point that I really, really, really want to drive home, and we see this in the US and it's in Europe as well, where the government has, and, you know, to a certain extent, people in cities have villainized farmers for farming's role in greenhouse gas emissions. And farmers do not feel that this is fair. And if you want to check in with the data on global farming's effect on greenhouse gas emissions, I do have podcasts on that, but I'll sum it up real quick and just remind you that 70 to 80% of all emissions can be traced back to the fossil fuel industry. And that includes everything from cars and manufacturing, coal, natural gas, drilling, blah, blah, blah. And we can't eat oil. Global agriculture numbers for greenhouse gas emissions are 20-25%, somewhere in there, and people can quibble about it. But that's where we're at right now globally. And so while I am all about lowering farming's carbon footprint, we have to be honest about the numbers and honest about the fact that we have a growing global population that needs to eat, and they need to eat affordably. And unfortunately, the fossil fuel magnates have somehow avoided having the finger pointed at them. Money. And farmers have fallen into this really convenient scapegoat role, in my opinion. And I think because of the anti-farmer bias that I mentioned, they kind of make a convenient scapegoat for people. And farmers have had enough. And I think the general public is also unaware or unwilling to understand why modern farming has become what it has, what pressures farmers have started facing from, you know, around 60, 70 years ago till now, why they make the decisions that they've made. And I think the public tends to want to have it all the ways. Like, we want cheap food, we want everything organic and super green, we want farmers to be like hand picking vegetables and placing them in wicker baskets. We don't tend to want to see the industrialization of our food system. But yeah, we definitely don't want to pay more for any of our produce. So we want to have it all the ways. And I got to call that out right now. Today's episode is brought to you by G5 Insurance. And if you're a rancher, farmer, or a small business owner, I want you to listen up, because G5 Agency insures everything that we do at Little Creek. These are our insurance agents, and they've been with us since the very beginning. I deal with a lot of different businesses through our work, and I am constantly blown away by how different it is working with G5. I feel like they actually know us, they're invested in us, they care about us. It feels like a very old-fashioned, personalized experience. Our agent will call me to check in. They will even send me a DM on Instagram. If I have any questions, I just know, I'm going to run this by Eric, or I'm going to shoot Lorraine an email. And they have really stayed with us as we've grown and really facilitated the growth of our business. Our insurance needs are complex. We're on a farm. We have heavy equipment. We work with livestock. We ship perishable food products. We run tourism events on different ranches with large animals, and we have business vehicles. Like, if you know anything about insurance, you know what a feat it is that we love our agents. G5 wasn't daunted by any of our needs. I am ride or die at this point, and I highly recommend them to anyone out there in need of business insurance. G5 can write in 48 states and has years of experience working with farms, ranches, and small businesses. You can find them at g5agency.com. So the farmers over in Europe have had enough. They are holding signs like farmers are going extinct. They basically feel that they can no longer make anything close to a decent living from farming. And farmers, I mean, I need to state the obvious, but this is not a profession you go into to make a lot of money. It's just not. I always get so shocked when people, like activists, comment on my social media, like, you're exploiting animals for profit. I'm like, first of all, profit. Are you guys making a profit? And then secondly, I'm like, do you think this was my only option? Like, respectfully, I could have made a lot more money doing something else. Respectfully, like, I have skills and marketable abilities and would have been an asset in any job market. Like, I don't do this for the money. If I was interested in money, I would have done something else. It's insulting and kind of a deranged thing to say. There's a quote in the US that farming is the only industry where we buy inputs at retail prices and sell at wholesale prices. This has kind of been a problem forever. Basically, the inputs are insanely high, and then farmers sell at like bottom of the barrel prices. You know, when everything that we buy is super expensive, tractors, loaders, equipment, land, labor. And then, you know, the people that make all the profit on our products, for the most part, when we're selling into a commodity market, are the middlemen and the end retailers and grocery stores and food producers. And you know, I think the USDA puts out like an annual farmer's share of each food dollar kind of thing. And it really is shocking. Like when you buy bread or milk from the grocery store, let's say you're paying $3 for a loaf of bread, you know, the actual farmers who made all the products, they don't tend to make a large percentage of that. Here's a quote from a Spanish farmer protesting. This is via the Associated Press. I think it sums it up very well. She said, "It is impossible to live from the rural industry, which is all we want, to make a living from our work. This is all that we ask for." And this is why I was like so offended by the article in The Economist. It was basically like calling farmers spoiled. Like, I just haven't seen any claims or requests or demands from farmers that are anything aside from like, we would like to just continue farming and not go extinct. Like, we would like to be able to pay our bills. They're not like, we want a 30% profit margin. They're just like, help. The requests are like pretty freaking humble. So I think that's important to know. Okay, so now we're going to dive into like the specifics of what they're dealing with, so that we can understand it better. Unfair competition is really like the big thing that the European farmers are saying they're experiencing. And it resonates with us in the U.S. We have this here. The overall crux of the issue is that the more and more developed nations that are kind of promoting climate goals, especially in Europe, is that farmers here and there are held to higher standards of production, basically. It is more expensive for us to raise beef in the U.S. than it is for them to raise beef in South America. Some of this has to do with, you know, animal welfare things or licensing, education, restrictions on different chemicals that we're not allowed to use here. Yeah, just environmental protections, all this stuff. And you know, the cost of land, things like that. Now, mostly that's fine. I mean, farmers want to protect the environment and produce food in a responsible way. And nobody wants to allow bad eggs to just go out there and farm in a damaging way to animals. Farmers are not stupid. I keep saying that. I feel like I have to keep saying that. You know, we're not saying like, no, please let us hurt the earth. That's our goal. We actually love, we love damaging the soil. But the problem is, it feels very unfair to be held to these higher standards that are more expensive, more labor intensive, you know, make all of our products cost more, make our profit margins go down, and then to have to compete on the grocery store shelf with foods from other countries that are imported that do not have the same requirements. And so it feels like, you know, the people that are buying our products are actively working against us by buying cheaper, you know, imported meat or veggies. In the beef world, we see, you know, Brazilian beef being brought in where there's accusations down there of deforesting the rainforest to raise beef. And in the U.S., we, you know, it's very different. We are raising cattle, you know, for the most part on non-arable land that is not suitable for, let's say, vegetable production or tillage of any kind. We're raising grazing animals on land that is appropriate for grazing. So it doesn't get a lot of rainfall, for example, like here in Montana. We have great genetics. We've made all these improvements. We're producing 18% of the world's beef with 6% of the world's cattle. And already we are using fewer and fewer resources to produce the same amount of beef each year. But at the grocery store, because of our weird, messed up country of origin labeling laws, beef imported from South America can actually be labeled product of the USA simply if it's processed here. So let's say they import the carcasses and then they package it up here. That means it can be labeled product of the USA. And as a consumer, you're not able to actually ensure that you're buying American beef born and raised unless you find like a farm, a ranch like ours and buy it from us. I'm not trying to fearmonger you. Beef is super safe at the grocery store. But these are facts. I've been wanting to do an episode on country of origin labeling, referred to as COOL, COOL. But honestly, I think it's so niche and kind of boring that I hesitate. But all you need to know is that meat is exempt from country of origin labeling laws in a way that is different from other food and manufactured products. Like, we know where our avocados are grown, our pasta, but the rules are different from meat. and it is uniquely unfair to American ranchers. This is happening in Europe as well. So I follow a lot of British farmers who are raising lamb, and the lamb raised in England is much more expensive than lamb imported from Australia. And so what happens is it decreases demand for British lamb. British farmers get reamed, and then consumers are kind of forced to buy Australian lamb. They're struggling. They're trying to save a few dollars. And yeah, it just creates a cycle where the British farmers are doing worse and worse and getting more and more frustrated. Now let's talk about chemical use. So something else farmers are protesting is various restrictions on the use of chemicals. So that's use of fertilizer. And then in particular, there's a call to halve the amount of pesticide used by 2030. And you might be like, farmers, it's a bad look to be protesting to use more pesticides. Like, don't you guys care about the land? You know, don't you want to reduce your fertilizer use? So like I said before, this is all part of the overall European Union's goal of being carbon neutral. And until you actually look at, you know, pesticide rates in Europe, it might sound like the farmers have nothing to be upset about here. But let's look at what's been going on. So the first thing you should know is that pesticide application in Europe is not going up. It's actually been relatively stable for the last 15 to 20 years, while overall agricultural productivity in Europe has been consistently going up for like the last 50 years, meaning that for the last 5 decades or so, European farmers have already been producing more food with the same inputs or fewer. And that includes inputs of all kind, not just chemical fertilizer, but also like acreage, fuel, all of it, labor. And so from the farmer's perspective, they're trying to say like, we are already meeting climate goals. We have been every year. We're getting, I think I saw it's like 1 to 2% more efficient every single year. We are already doing it. And so they're saying for you to come in and sweep in and say, all right, in 7 years, you need to cut in half your use to pesticides is, first of all, it's unnecessarily burdensome and arbitrary. Second of all, we've already been doing what you ask voluntarily, and we're insulted and offended that you think you can tell us how to farm efficiently and in an environmentally friendly way. And do we, you know, if we are looking at drastic input cuts, all of a sudden, you are cutting us off at the knees at a time when we cannot afford to struggle more than we already are. Because it all sounds great to just go like, oh yeah, use less fertilizer, use less pesticides. What doesn't sound great is like more pests eating crops, you know, fewer bushels per acre grown. And that's what happens when you drastically cut inputs. And the farmers are saying, we're already being squeezed by cheap foreign imports. We're already paying so much for fuel. We're getting reamed by low commodity prices. We cannot lose any more of the tools that we have right now to farm efficiently. And I also imagine the farmers are being like, F you. This is part of scapegoating that is totally unfair. One article in The Guardian called farmers' attitudes a green lash, like a backlash to green initiatives. And here's a quote that one of the farmers told Time magazine. On the one hand, we're being asked to farm more sustainably, which is fair enough because we know that the climate crisis exists because it's affecting us, she says. But at the same time, we are being asked to produce as cheap as possible, which puts us in an impossible situation. And I mentioned before, there's a political layer to this, which is that farmers tend to be more conservative or centrist, and green policies tend to come more from the progressives, from city people. And so there's this kind of baked in polarization. We see this in the US too. I just feel like it should be more carrot rather than stick when, you know, legislation for environmental reasons is being implemented on farmers. Farmers are so much more likely to do what you want if you properly incentivize them rather than try and scapegoat, blame, or punish them. Now, adding to the polarization is the sense from folks in government and cities that say like, hey, we're already giving farming, the farming sector, a lot of subsidies. You you guys are already getting plenty of help. Like, quit your belly aching and do your job, basically. Now, I am not qualified to get into the topic of subsidies. When I try to get too deep into economics, my brain starts to feel fuzzy. It's just not my thing. And even the experts disagree on the effects of subsidies. The general feeling among consumers is that they probably keep food cheap. I have an interview actually coming up with a professor who says the opposite, that subsidies keep food more expensive. And trying to untangle it and parse it all out makes my brain hurt. But I will say, of the farmers and ranchers I know personally, some of whom have received what would be considered like a subsidy in one form or another, these subsidies don't tend to come in the way that you think they do, where it's just like a payout, you know, to a farmer. It might be more like cost sharing to install a highly specialized piece of equipment that is environmentally efficient that the farmers could never afford otherwise. Like, it's not like free money for farmers. And the other thing that we see here a lot in the U.S. is like most of the farming subsidies go to kind of the top, very, very small percent of farms. And then we have just a ton of smaller farmers struggling. Like, we do not see farmers as fat cats, like chewing on cigars and becoming like robber barons off of subsidies, okay? It's just like a false image. Another way that the farmers feel that they're being squeezed and that they're protesting against is that in some areas they are being asked to leave a certain percentage of their land fallow or to take it out of production. So in the US, we have a lot more of this, I think, than they have in Europe. We have this program called the CRP, Conservation Resource Protection, I think. Basically, landowners will be paid not to graze or not to farm some of their land. And my understanding is that this program creates public benefit. Basically, we have environmental services that, you know, leaving land fallow provides. We're preserving more land and open spaces, and we actually are holding some valuable land in reserve if we ever did need to graze or farm more land suddenly. Like, let's say we weren't able to import food from some countries. We actually have like a reserve of land in the US that we could then tap into to grow food. There's wildlife benefits, water benefits, biodiversity benefits, and it gives the landowners some amount of security for not absolutely maximizing their production. So we do have this practice in the US, and I think it's pretty cool. It sounds like, though, in Europe, they have a lot less of it. And if you're already struggling and, let's say, losing money or barely breaking even, and then someone says, hey, you need to actually take a further 5% cut into your production, they're like, but we can't afford to. Our margins are already razor thin. We can't continue to cut chemical use and cut output and leave more land fallow and compete against cheaper imported food, like who's, you know, the farmers who grow it don't have to do any of this stuff. Like, you're squeezing us too hard. A lot of the farmers, you know, they just sound so reasonable in these articles. The quotes that they're saying is like, listen, we're not denying the need to be environmentally responsible. We're actually on the front lines of climate change ourselves. Like, we are more affected by it than most people, and our livelihood is already more threatened than most people's. Like, we're dealing with drought, we're dealing with extreme rain and flooding. We're already being victimized by it. So don't like lecture us on climate change and how to be a solution. Like, we're out here essentially like on the front lines of it. Like, you need to be our ally instead of our adversary in this. It also sounds like over in Europe, the red tape has become absolutely insane for farmers. So I'm going to read a pretty extensive quote from an Associated Press article that I found like really illustrated what's been going on and some of their frustrations. On a farm in northern Belgium, not far from the hundreds of tractors blocking Europe's second biggest port to demand more respect for farmers, Bart Doci was switching on his computer, waiting for a government program to load. They supervise us with satellite images and even with drones, Doci said. His frustration highlights the yawning gap in trust and understanding that has opened up between European farmers and what they increasingly see as a nanny state looking into every nook and cranny of their barns, analyzing how every drop of liquid manure is spread. At 51, Doci is far from an embittered extremist farmer setting bales of hay on fire. He comes from old-time farming stock, generations of conservative Christian Democrats that have traditionally provided the backbone of European agriculture. Once Doechii finishes dealing with 900 pigs and some 74 acres of corn and potatoes, he exchanges his overalls and rubber boots for a three-piece suit. He's also the mayor of this farming community. With the smallest error, he says, there are fines. Doechii said he had often heard from dozens of farmers in his town how the fines can amount to hundreds of euros simply with a wrong click of the mouse. The same stories come up at every farmer's protest, be they Italian, French, Dutch, or Spanish. What really gets Doechii is when bureaucratic deadlines are imposed on him, for example, if certain crops or fertilizers need to be sown by September 1. If the last week of August is unbelievably rainy, you will not be able to sow properly, but nevertheless, you are obligated to sow. Otherwise, you may be faced with a fine, he said. A farmer actually lives in conflict between the government, which wants to be in charge, and nature, which is in charge, and you can't actually change anything about nature, Doechii said. I think that last example is so telling. It's like, I think everybody listening to this podcast has a level of expertise in something. So think of the thing that you do that you're an expert in. And then think of, you know, rules being imposed on you that are kind of debilitating and then also just like really arbitrary and not conducive to you doing a good job. That's what these farmers are saying. What's my TLDR on this? You know, the thesis statement at the end of kind of a lot of rambling. I just fundamentally feel that whether it's in Europe or the US, farmers deserve a major seat at the table when it comes to climate legislation. They need to be considered valuable partners with invaluable expertise. Farmers should be respected in the way that we respect EMTs and teachers, because farmers provide an absolutely essential service that not that many people want to do. The work is often thankless, exhausting, not particularly profitable. And the last, you know, decade or so, having made them our climate scapegoats, as I have said for years, is a huge mistake. Imagining that farmers do not understand that they rely on the health of their land to keep pursuing their own livelihood is insulting. To imagine that you or me, you know, working in an office in a city, that we care more about the land or the countryside than the farmers who spend their days on it, or that we care more about the animals in their care than they do, it's insulting. It just is. And so we need to find ways to be like realistic and collaborative and inclusive as we try to make our economies more sustainable while also keeping national food security insured. And maybe I'm just a little bit of too much of an anti-establishment person, but I did not hate watching the farmers throw eggs and spew manure at government buildings. I didn't hate it, if I'm being honest. Like, to me, nobody was really getting hurt here. There's a certain part of me that is watching these protests with some awe and some respect, and I'm impressed at their ability to organize. I feel like in the U.S., we have such individualism, and we don't work together the way that they are over there. And it really seems like they are getting at least some of their demands met. I'm quite impressed. You know, there's been statements from the government already that they're going to either delay or alter some of these imposed deadlines and restrictions. I'm impressed. I'm watching it with a lot of interest. And yeah, if you know anybody that wants to come on and really bring this home for us of what it's really like to be kind of farming in the EU, I would really love to have them on and to learn more about it. But if there's one thing I can just implore you guys as Choose Wisely listeners, it's to not make farmers our enemies and to really check ourselves in what I feel is like a pretty strong anti-farmer bias. Like, on one hand, we sort of want to romanticize what farmers do and like, oh, what a simple life and how beautiful. But then on the other hand, a lot of what we assume about farming, I think, shows how low our opinions actually are of farmers and sort of this elitism that gets bred in the cities. And I think it's a mistake. I think it's not conducive to a greener, more sustainable world. And it's not conducive to, yeah, meeting any of our climate goals. We need to give farmers a seat at the table, and we're going to get where we want to go much, much faster. So with that said, thank you so much for joining me today on Choose Wisely. I hope your next meal is delicious and your next conversation nuanced. Choose Wisely is produced by me and edited by Lauren DeLuca. Give us a rating and a review. We really appreciate it. You can follow us on Instagram at Choose Wisely Podcast. You can find us on Patreon and become a regenerator or a sustainivore. That's at patreon.com/choosewiselypodcast. And you can email us anytime at choosewiselypodcast@gmail.com. Cheers.